WZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franz, and a week after Hurricane Helene hit Florida and devastated southeast states, more than 200 people are now confirmed dead, and the toll is rising. President Biden in Florida and Georgia today pledging more federal aid. It comes a day after he toured hard-hit North Carolina. ABC's Karen Travers says the damage and recovery needs are vast.
The White House says more than 40,000 people in North Carolina have applied so far for disaster assistance, and FEMA has paid out more than $6.2 million to people there impacted by Hurricane Helene.
Vice President Kamala Harris campaigning in Wisconsin today, joining her staunch Republican Liz Cheney, who endorsed Harris last month, saying former President Trump is a threat to democracy. Trump holding a rally in Michigan today. Israel continues airstrikes in southern Lebanon targeting Hezbollah. A large blast occurring in Beirut a short time ago after the IDF called on civilians to evacuate the area. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News, your news roundup in quick podcast form.
Good afternoon and welcome to Civic Media special coverage of Vice President Kamala Harris's latest campaign rally in Wisconsin. The most novel backdrop for this event, Ripon, Wisconsin, the birthplace of the modern Republican Party, the Little White Schoolhouse. Well, today it's going to be the scene of leading Republicans announcing, throwing their support behind the Democratic nominee for president. I'm joined in the studio by Dom Salvia and Dan Schaefer, political editor for Civic Media. And gentlemen, this really is something that maybe even a few election cycles ago would have seemed unthinkable, wouldn't it?
Certainly does. It exemplifies a pretty significant shift that is happening in American politics, where you have a leader like Liz Cheney, who is out front endorsing Kamala Harris, and we see a number of other Republicans across the state of Wisconsin lining up behind her as well. The Harris-Walz campaign today launched the Republicans for Harris-Walz effort with a group of more than 20 Republicans from all corners of Wisconsin. Obviously, the significance of being at Ripon College today, known as the birthplace of the Republican Party, is significant in symbolic ways, and is significant that she is making this trip and making this speech alongside a longtime Republican today as well.
Dan, how did we get to this place? How did we get all of these Republicans announcing their endorsement of a Democrat and instead of the standard bearer of the Republican Party for close to a decade?
Well, I think this has been a slow train coming, and in a variety of different ways. You see the transformation and realignment within the two parties in American politics that has certainly been accelerated under Donald Trump, and has been accelerated yet again, I believe, in the wake of the election in 2020 with Donald Trump and the Republican Party's efforts to overturn the results of that election. Obviously, Cheney has been one of the voices out front on that as part of the investigation into the insurrection on January 6th. And I think, you know, the theme of today, you see the signs in Ripon, you see the messaging across the board, country over party is the way so many are putting it in this context, where you see these Republican leaders saying, you know, I might be voting for Republicans down ballot in my local races, whatever it might be. But at the top of the ticket, Donald Trump is not an acceptable candidate. He is unqualified for office in so many ways. He does not respect the democracy of our nation. And so many of these Republican leaders are taking the step not just to not vote for Trump. And I think this is an important piece of this, too. It would be one thing for, you know, some voters to sit out the election. And we've seen that with certain Republicans talking about Donald Trump in 2016 and 2020. But to take the step to endorse the other candidate, to endorse the Democrat, to endorse Kamala Harris in this race, I think is rather significant, where you're seeing that there is a recognition here from some of these, you know, quote unquote, never Trump Republicans to not just not vote for Trump, but to vote for the one person who can defeat Trump. And that is Kamala Harris.
Dom Salvia, you've been keeping your finger on the pulse of the day's news throughout the day. How unusual is what we're going to see tonight?
Well, I got to tell you, when you, as mentioned, when you have former Vice President Dick Cheney as part of a coalition for the Harris-Walz campaign, along with Senator Bernie Sanders, I think that kind of runs the gambit. Hope Carnup reporting in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The GOP, as I put it, the good old days, in March 20th of 1854, the little white schoolhouse we're talking about hosted a meeting that brought together Whigs, Democrats, and free soilers who created a new entity called the Republican Party. Now, that group apparently, quote, believed that their respective parties could not prevent the extension of slavery to the North. They come out of a schoolhouse in agreement that one unified front was crucial to the fight against slavery, and thus began the Republican Party. What lofty goals, what an ideology, what a history, what a start, and how far that party has fallen. The Republican Party that is talked about in these contexts, in these terms, is dead and gone. This is now the mega party. This is the party of one personality. It's a cult of personality, and that is Donald Trump. If anybody else would be to bounce around the lies that Donald Trump has spewed, just specifically regarding the election of 2020, he said again today in Michigan, we won. We won the election. It was a rigged election. Now, of course, he denied that on the debate when he was with debating Vice President Harris. He said he was being sarcastic. But even today, J.D. Vance said, yes, Donald Trump won the election. He's got political allies, Corey Lewandowski, that can't admit that Donald Trump lost the election. Now, we can't even get past that. How are you going to talk about what, you know, capital gains tax rates should be?
Well, exactly. The former Vice President Cheney said in an interview that, you know, Donald Trump had to try to hold on to his power through lies first, and when that didn't work, through violence. And I believe that's a big reason why we've got cameras trained on Ripon, Wisconsin today, because this is a line too far for many Republicans who consider themselves patriots first, Republicans second.
Yeah, I'm hoping there will be more of this, and I commend Liz Cheney, and I commend some of these other Republicans who've come out and, as mentioned, Dan, not just say, you know, they're not going to vote for Trump. They're going to vote for Harris, even though, as we talked about, some of the other policies they certainly don't agree on. And I'm hoping, you know, we still have some Bushes that are out there. We still have some highly regarded Republicans could have some influence in this. And if they agree, like I think I do, and certainly Liz Cheney and some of those other Republicans do, that this is important. This is about the basic democracy, the basic functioning of self-governance. I'm hoping that more Republicans will follow this example of Cheney and come forward and support Harris as well.
Civic Media News's Lisa Hale is at Ripon College right now. And Lisa, give us a sense for what you've been able to observe since you arrived in town.
Well, I tell you, number one, I've never seen this many people in Ripon, Wisconsin. I used to live here, and I'm used to it being a quiet, sleepy little town. They are still in line trying to get in, and it is phenomenal to see. The crowd is very excited and very pro-Harris Waltz right now. I haven't found anybody who was, on the I don't know side of things. And it's just, you can feel the energy. Everybody's so happy and ready for this to go. And the big thing is the country over party signs that you see with all the festooning of the American flags and the bunting that you see as well. It's just really an interesting sight.
Very good. Dan, Lisa Hale is in Ripon, and she'll be keeping us apprised of what's happening throughout the early evening. This event's scheduled to begin at 5 p.m. These things never get started on time. So in the meantime, you get the four of us. So, Dan Schaefer, what are you going to be listening for? What do you expect to hear?
Well, one of the things that I've been taking a look at this week is the results of the latest Marquette University Law School poll. And one of the things that really is standing out in that poll that has changed significantly since Kamala Harris has become the Democratic nominee is among independent voters. When Joe Biden was at the top of the ticket, those independent voters were leaning towards Trump. Now that has changed in a really significant way, where Kamala Harris now for two consecutive polls is getting 60% of the vote from or support in the poll from those independent voters. Now, of course, independent voters, that's a smaller group than, of course, the other two parties. With how polarized and partisan our politics tend to be in the state of Wisconsin. But her having that type of a lead with independent voters is significant. And clearly, with the event happening in Ripon today, the Harris-Walz campaign is certainly targeting those independent voters who might not feel like they have, that might feel like they are, you know, a person without a country, person without a party in this particular election, but maybe trying to appeal to people who just do not like Donald Trump and want a different direction than what we saw under Trump's presidency 4 years ago.
You have plenty of people who, as you say, do not like Donald Trump, but plenty still do. Neither candidate has pulled ahead in any polling that we've seen so far this week. This remains a very tight race. And right now, we can't really say for sure what might happen on November 5th. Nobody seems to be getting any traction or momentum.
Yeah, four of the last six presidential elections in the state of Wisconsin have been decided by less than 1%. So I think if nothing else, we can expect a close race here. And that's why I think this particular event matters for the Harris campaign, is because they are trying to appeal to voters who might not be sure about their decision this year. Some of those independent voters who maybe have drifted away from the Republican Party. And I think, you know, just as Lisa mentioned when she was on the broadcast just a few minutes ago, you know, the excitement on the ground there, I think, speaks volumes. And I think, you know, the location of this is very interesting. The fact that you have so many people coming out to attend this type of event in what is, you know, typically known as a very, very red area in the state of Wisconsin, too. I think it can often be overlooked just how many rural Democrats there are in Wisconsin. You know, people, rural Democrats across the Fox Valley and not too far from Ripon as well. So I think, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how this crowd receives this speech from Liz Cheney and from Kamala Harris.
Well, perhaps we can get a bit of an idea with that. Lisa Hale has interviewed some of the people who've come to Ripon, Wisconsin today to hear the former congresswoman and the vice president. Lisa, what sorts of things do people have to say?
Oh, they're all very excited, and they all look to see, they look at Harris as the choice right now. They don't think they have another choice. As a matter of fact, if we want to play the interview I had with Alan Patterson, he was all about Kamala.
She's special. She's the one that has to be on top to keep our country together.
Are you already decided you're going to be voting for Harris Walz?
Yes.
What is it that makes you want to cast that vote?
The positive reasons are that she's got the right stuff. And I think in this day and age, temperament and character are everything.
And then after that, I spoke with a gentleman named Damien who really lists her qualifications as the reasons why he was interested in Kamala.
Well, I just had to see Kamala in person. You know, every time she stands in front of the American people, she only proves to just be the right candidate even further. You know, she's the most qualified person in the last 50 years to even seek the presidency, to even get this close to the presidency. And it just makes it even better that she's a woman of color. You know, over 30 years of experience, a Juris Doctorate. Donald Trump can't even spell Juris Doctorate. Like, this woman is just the most qualified candidate that we've had in the last 50 years.
So those were two of the interviews that I had. I had many others that I will be featuring on the news tomorrow, if that's okay.
Very good. Thank you. Lisa Hale is at Ripon College, where we expect to hear the vice president, her latest stop on the campaign trail. Wisconsin, of course, a battleground state. I don't need to remind you of that. You hear it all the time on the news. To that point, Donald Trump will be just down the road from Ripon in Juneau on Sunday. And I think the fact that we're seeing these campaign stops get away from Milwaukee and Madison and get into the Prairie du Chien's and Juneau's and Ripon's of the world says something about, you know, just how many votes these campaigns feel they have to mine yet.
Yeah, I absolutely think so, Terry. And given the excitement for the Harris Walls campaign, I mean, look at the fundraising. They got money to spend, so they're going to, you know, make the point to go out to perhaps some of these areas that they normally wouldn't. And I think it's very smart. I did see the statistic that 63% of the folks in Ripon were Trump supporters. But I absolutely believe that there are some votes to be gotten out in the rural areas. I'm not clear that a lot of the folks that, you know, work on these dairy farms or own these dairy farms are really down for the anti-immigrant language that the former president has been using. I think those are very concerning. So I'm glad to see the Democratic Party going out there and trying to get every vote, not just in Milwaukee, not just in Madison, but some of these other areas as well.
Absolutely. Dan Schaefer, we're seeing, you know, the Democrats go into red counties. We're seeing Republicans go into blue counties. And explain to us the thinking behind that strategy, please.
Yeah, I think it's just about, you know, kind of lessening the damage. I think we saw Donald Trump in Dane County earlier this week. Democrats have been running up some pretty wild margins in Dane County with defeating Republicans over and over again, and with Dane County continuing to grow, if they, you know, Republicans can cut into those margins just a little bit, that can make a big deal on the calculus statewide. And I think Dom made a great point here too about, you know, folks in rural areas across Wisconsin as well. It's not like the breakdown, the political breakdown in rural areas is like 90 to 10 in favor of Republicans. It's maybe 65-35 in favor of Republicans, but that's still a significant number of votes out there in rural areas that are people who are casting votes for Democrats. And I think, you know, it's again, if you can get those margins closer to, you know, if it was 60-40 instead of 65-35 in some of those districts, that makes a big deal. And again, I think, you know, there's been so many of the never Trump Republicans, and we've been having them in focus today a bit with this event, with Liz Cheney being there and whatnot. And you think of the impact that is, the shift in the parties has been in the WOW counties in particular. You know, in Waukesha County, the third largest county in the state, home to about 400,000 people, you know, you had Republicans winning with 70 to 75% of the vote just a decade ago. And now you're seeing Democrats really cut into those margins in a really significant way. Republicans, I think there's a possibility that could get less than 60% in Waukesha County, perhaps even, you know, win in Ozaukee County. Washington County of the three has been the reddest, but I think it's just shows how much has changed in recent years as well. And I think you take a look at some of the WOW County numbers from the Republican primary, that's where Nikki Haley did the best as well. And we've seen some efforts across the state, you know, talking about Haley voters for Harris. And I think, you know, today and this event will create some sort of permission structure for many Republicans to see this event, to see what's happening in Ripon with Liz Cheney, with other Republicans, and say, okay, maybe I can get on board with Kamala Harris to defeat Donald Trump.
I'm glad you mentioned Nikki Haley, because going all the way back to the Republican primary last spring, if we can go back into some ancient history, Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis together had a large number of votes taken away from Donald Trump, more than the protest vote against Joe Biden, who was the nominee at the time, over his policies in Israel. So it would seem as though there is some plenty of votes to be harvested, or I should say, you know, collected with this sentiment that's out there in Wisconsin right now. Go ahead, Dan. We are going to go to Ripon right now, and former Congresswoman Liz Cheney.
Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Boy. My God, what an amazing, amazing day to be in Wisconsin. Thank you all. Thank you so much. Thank you, Sheriff, for your courage and your service and for that wonderful introduction. It is such a pleasure to be here today at Ripon College. And I have to tell you all, Wisconsin is special for me for a particularly important reason. Way back in 1966, when a very young Dick Cheney and Lynn Cheney were graduate students at the University of Wisconsin. I was born here. And so go Badgers, exactly. So coming back to Wisconsin always feels to me more than a little bit like coming home. I want you to know, the last time that I was here campaigning was 20 years ago, in 2004. And although politics divided us, certainly in that year, we were united in our admiration for the Packers' legendary Bart Starr. And one of the most special and memorable days I had on any campaign was the day that we got to spend with him. Which included a personal tour of Lambeau Field. So it's very, very special to be back again. Now, you all know, of course, that here in Ripon, the Republican Party was founded. It was founded in a meeting in 1854 in the Little White Schoolhouse. And it was founded by people who were opposed to slavery. It was that Republican Party, the party of Lincoln and Eisenhower, the party of Reagan and Bush. It's that party that I belonged to my entire life. I volunteered on my first presidential campaign. I already told you how old I am, so I'll tell you. In 1976, when I was 10 years old, and I was sealing envelopes for President Ford's reelection campaign, I cast my first vote ever in 1984 for Ronald Reagan. I served in the State Department in both Bush administrations, and I served in the United States House of Representatives for three terms, including as the third highest ranking Republican in House leadership. So, in other words, I was a Republican even before Donald Trump started spray tanning. I am a Ronald Reagan conservative. I believe in limited government. I believe in low taxes. I believe in a strong national defense. And I believe that the private sector is the engine of growth of our economy. I believe that the family and not the government is the most important structure in our society. I know that our security and our freedom depend upon a world in which America, with our allies, leads. And above all else, I know that the most conservative of conservative values is fidelity to our Constitution. I tell you, I have never voted for a Democrat, but this year, I am proudly casting my vote for Vice President Kamala Harris. Thank you. but mostly we're not going back. Vice President Harris is standing in the breach at a critical moment in our nation's history. She's working to unite reasonable people from all across the political spectrum. Vice President Harris has dedicated her life to public service. I know that she loves our country, and I know that she will be a president for all Americans. As a conservative, as a patriot, as a mother, as someone who reveres our Constitution, I am honored to join her in this urgent cause. As we meet here today, our republic faces a threat unlike any we have faced before. A former president who attempted to stay in power by unraveling the foundations of our republic, by refusing to accept the lawful results confirmed by dozens of courts of the 2020 election. We cannot turn away from this truth. In this election, putting patriotism ahead of partisanship is not an aspiration, it is our duty. At the very heart of our survival as a republic is the peaceful transition of power. Ronald Reagan said this was nothing short of a miracle, that every 4 or 8 years, the most powerful office in our land, indeed the most powerful office in the world, is passed peacefully to a new president. In the United States of America, violence does not and must never determine who rules us. Voters do. And in this country, under our Constitution, our president has a particular solemn obligation to ensure and guarantee the peaceful transfer of power. Since the beginning of the republic, every president in our history has fulfilled that duty. Every president until Donald Trump. When Donald Trump woke up on the morning of January 6, 2021, his intention, despite having lost the election, was that he would remain president. Rather than accept his loss and concede defeat, he had spent months overseeing a multi-part plan to attempt to seize power and remain in office. He ignored the rulings of the courts. He corruptly pressured state legislatures, including here in Wisconsin, to overturn the results of their elections. He told the Justice Department to lie for him. He conspired to have fake electoral votes cast, and he corruptly pressured his vice president to take illegal and unconstitutional actions. He summoned a mob to Washington, D.C. with his lies, and he sent the armed mob to the United States Capitol in an effort to stop the counting of electoral votes. As the violent mob attacked our Capitol, in Donald Trump's name, as they brutally beat law enforcement officers, as they hunted the vice president and the Speaker of the House, Donald Trump watched the attack on television for hours. Sitting in the dining room next to the Oval Office, he refused repeated pleas from his family, from his closest advisors, from the most senior officials in his campaign and in our government to tell the mob to leave. And when Donald Trump finally did speak publicly after hours of violence, after the Capitol had been invaded, he praised the rioters. He did not condemn them. That's who Donald Trump is. Those facts that we know about what Donald Trump did including what he did when our Capitol was under siege. Those facts do not come from Donald Trump's political opponents. Those facts come from the people closest to him. They are the ones who testified that Donald Trump did not want to stop the violent attack on our Capitol. When he learned that Vice President Pence was not going to abandon his oath and help Trump seize power, Trump sent out a tweet attacking Pence and further inflaming the mob. One of Trump's aides testified that shortly after that, this aide received a phone call alerting him that the vice president had been evacuated for his own safety from his office off the floor of the Senate. This aide recalled rushing to the dining room to tell Trump, hoping that this information would convince him to take immediate action to ensure the vice president's safety. Instead, after this aide delivered that news, Donald Trump looked up at him and said, "So what?" He said, "So what?" It is Donald Trump's closest aides who also told us this. They said that while the attack on our Capitol was happening, Donald Trump was handed a note informing him that a civilian had been shot at the door to the chamber of the United States House of Representatives. Donald Trump put the note down on the table in front of him, continued to watch the attack on television, and still refused to tell the mob to leave the Capitol. Donald Trump was willing to sacrifice our Capitol to allow law enforcement officers to be beaten and brutalized in his name and to violate the law and the Constitution in order to seize power for himself. I don't care if you are a Democrat or a Republican or an independent. That is depravity, and we must never become numb to it. Any person who would do these things can never be trusted with power again. We must defeat Donald Trump on November 5th. In that election 20 years ago, when we were campaigning in Wisconsin and all across the country, we were campaigning as compassionate conservatives. What January 6th shows us is that there is not an ounce of compassion in Donald Trump. He is petty, he is vindictive, and he is cruel. And Donald Trump is not fit to lead this good and great nation. Now, sometimes people will say, you know, January 6th wasn't that big a deal. In a time when I have heard many pretty stunning things from Republicans, one of the most stunning was yesterday from your former governor, Scott Walker, who said basically, people are over January 6th. When you think about what that means, that an elected official, a former elected official, is so willing to minimize what happened, to say things like I've heard from others, to say, don't worry, our institutions held that day. We have a responsibility, all of us, to remind people that our institutions don't defend themselves. We the people have to do that. We the people defend our institutions. And our institutions held on January 6th because there were brave men and women, including elected officials at every level of our government, who did their duty, who stood up for what was right, who resisted Donald Trump's efforts to pressure them to violate their oaths. And our institutions held especially because of the bravery of the men and women in law enforcement and in our military, in our Capitol Police, our Secret Service, the Metropolitan Police. They are the ones who defended our Capitol, our democracy, and our lives. Many of them fought a bloody, bloody hours-long battle on the west front of the Capitol. Go watch the video of that battle. It is sickening. They're the ones who held the line and prevented far worse from happening that day. They are the true profiles in courage. Do not let anyone lie about what happened and what they did. Our institutions also held because of Vice President Mike Pence, who refused to violate his oath to the Constitution. And that is why Mike Pence is not Donald Trump's running mate today. Instead, J.D. Vance is on the ticket. Vance has said, I mean, that's true. Vance has said repeatedly that he would have done what Donald Trump wanted, that he would have rejected electoral votes. He would have thrown out the votes of the people of Wisconsin because he didn't like the way that you voted. That is tyranny, and that is disqualifying. History teaches us again and again that democracies can fall. They fall to populists, they fall to strongmen. Strongmen who beguile their fellow citizens with conspiracy theories and false emergencies. As my friend the late Charles Krauthammer taught us, the lesson of our history is that the task of merely maintaining strong and sturdy the structures of our constitutional order is unending. It is the continuing and ceaseless work of every generation. And that responsibility now falls on all of us in this election. This great country of ours requires leaders of character. We must choose men and women who have what Abraham Lincoln called a sincere heart. Our nation's second president, John Adams, put it this way. On the first night he ever spent in the White House, he wrote a letter to his wife, Abigail. And his letter included a prayer that is so special, President Kennedy had it engraved in the mantelpiece in the state dining room in the White House. And in his letter, he said this, "May none but honest and wise men ever rule under this roof." Now, I'm confident, just a second, I am confident that John Adams meant women, too. In this election, a broad coalition has come together to support Vice President Kamala Harris. Now, we may disagree on some things, but we are bound together by the one thing that matters to us as Americans more than any other, and that's our duty to our Constitution and our belief in the miracle and the blessing of this incredible nation. We have a shared commitment as Americans to ensuring that future generations live in a nation where power is transferred peacefully, where our leaders are men and women of good faith, and where our public servants set aside partisan battles to do what's right for this country. So today I ask all of you here and everyone listening across this great country to join us. I ask you to meet this moment. I ask you to stand in truth, to reject the depraved cruelty of Donald Trump, and I ask you instead to help us elect Kamala Harris for president. I know that President Harris will be able to unite this nation. I know that she will be a president who will defend the rule of law. And I know that she will be a president who can inspire all of our children, and if I might say so, especially our little girls. To do great things. So help us right the ship of our democracy so that history will say of us, when our time of testing came, we did our duty and we prevailed because we loved our country more. And now, it is my great honor to introduce you to our Vice President and the next president of the United States, Kamala Harris.
Former Congresswoman Liz Cheney wrapping up her remarks in Ripon, Wisconsin. Lisa Hale is in Ripon. And Lisa, the former Congresswoman's message is that putting a country before party in the year 2024 is a duty.
It is. And right now she's shaking the hands of Kamala Harris and they are talking just before she's coming to the podium. This is such an exciting time, going from people chanting, "Thank you, Liz," to now cheering Kamala Harris coming out. We'll have to see what happens, of course, but she is now at the podium.
It is so good to be back in Wisconsin. I thank you everyone for being, please have a seat. I thank you all for being here, but I have to emphasize that every time I come here, and Liz, I was actually a kid here too when my parents were at the University of Wisconsin, so we have that in common as well. In fact, Tony Evers always says when I land, welcome home. But I say all that to say every time that I've come here recently, one of the conversations that we have, all of us together, is how much we love our country and that really is the binding factor in us all being together and taking the time to be together to really just renew and remind everyone of what is at stake, but born out of love that we have this fight. And I want to thank you, Liz Cheney, for reminding us that regardless of party affiliation, is a factor that binds us all. And so I thank you for your support and your leadership and your courage. I also want to thank all the other great leaders who are with us today. Governor Tony Evers, where is he? Mayor Grant, thank you for the warm welcome. I want to thank Senator Tammy Baldwin, who is traveling around the state, but who I know you will re-elect in November. Thank you, Sheriff Michek, for your support and your life of service to the people of Iowa County. And so I do want to say a bit more about Liz Cheney. You all know her leadership, and she has obviously and so importantly been a leader for the people of Wyoming, but she has also been an extraordinary national leader and has served with great honor. And she not only, as she has talked today, recognizes that character is among the most important attributes of leadership, but she also personifies that attribute. And she possesses some of the qualities of character that I most respect in any individual and any leader. Courage, especially at a moment like this, where there are so many powerful forces that have been intent on trying to demean and belittle and make people afraid. And there are many who know it is wrong, and then there are those who have the courage to speak out loudly about it, and the conviction to speak truth. And, you know, it is so admirable when anyone does it, and especially when it is difficult to do in an environment such as this. But Liz Cheney really is a leader who puts country above party and above self, a true patriot, and it is my profound honor to have your support. And I also want to thank your father, Vice President Dick Cheney, for his support and what he has done to serve our country. Every endorsement matters, and this endorsement matters a great deal, Liz, and it carries a special significance because, as you said, we may not see eye to eye on every issue, and we are going to get back to a healthy two-party system, I am sure of that, where we will have vigorous debates. And as you said, you may not have supported a Democrat for president before, but as you have also said, we both love our country and we revere our democratic ideals. And we both also believe in the nobility of public service. And we know that our oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America is a sacred oath, an oath that must be honored and must never be violated. And your words today and the reason we are all here today, I think really do underscore perhaps one of the most fundamental questions that is facing the American people in this election. Who will obey that oath? Who will abide by the oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States of America? I have had the privilege. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I have sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution 6 times in my career, including as Vice President, as a United States Senator, and as the top law enforcement officer of the largest state in our country. Responsible for upholding and enforcing the laws of the state and the laws of the United States was the work I did. And I have never wavered in upholding that oath. And I have always executed it faithfully and without reservation. And therein lies the profound difference between Donald Trump and me. He, who violated the oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America. And make no mistake, he, who, if given the chance, would violate it again. Donald Trump lost the 2020 election. And as you have heard and know, he refused to accept the will of the people and the results of an election that was free and fair. As you have heard, he sent an armed mob to the United States Capitol, where they assaulted law enforcement officers. He threatened the life of his own vice president and refused to engage in the peaceful transfer of power. And let us be clear about how he intends to use power if elected again. He has called for jailing journalists, political opponents, anyone he sees and deems as being an enemy. He has pledged to destroy the independence of the Department of Justice. And he called for deploying our active duty military against our own citizens. I believe you and my running mate both. Well, listen, I believe that anyone who recklessly tramples on our democratic values as Donald Trump has, anyone who has actively and violently obstructed the will of the people and the peaceful transfer of power as Donald Trump has, anyone who has called for, I quote, termination of the Constitution of the United States, as Donald Trump has, must never again stand behind the seal of the President of the United States. Never again. Never again. And the tragic truth that we are facing in this election for President of the United States is that there is actually an honest question about whether one of the candidates will uphold the oath to the Constitution of the United States. That is the tragic truth of this election, that this is actually an honest question that we are having as Americans. And I know the vast majority of us agree that upholding the Constitution must be a basic requirement we expect of anyone seeking the highest office in the land. I know the vast majority of us, regardless of your political party, agree we must hold sacred America's fundamental principles, from the rule of law to free and fair elections to the peaceful transfer of power. And if you share that view, no matter your political party, there is a place for you with us and in this campaign, because those principles, I know, unite us across party lines. And in this election, I take seriously my pledge to be a president for all Americans. My entire career, I've only had one client, the people. And when I say that, I mean all the people. Not just those who share my party affiliation. Through all my decades in law enforcement, I never asked a victim or a witness, "Are you a Republican or a Democrat?" The only question I ever asked was, "Are you okay?" And that is the kind of president we deserve, and I pledge to you that is the kind of president I will be. Because the President of the United States must not look at our country through the narrow lens of ideology or petty partisanship or self-interest. The President of the United States must not look at our country as an instrument for their own ambitions. Our nation is not some spoil to be won. The United States of America is the greatest idea humanity ever devised. The nation that inspired the world to believe in the possibilities of a representative government. And so in the face of those who would endanger our magnificent experiment, people of every party must stand together. And let me be clear, democracy and freedom are not only at stake here at home. They are also at stake around the world. As President of the United States, I will strengthen, not abdicate, America's global leadership. Last week, I met with Ukraine's President Zelensky. And the message I delivered was the same message I've shared with him every time I've seen him. I stand with Ukraine, and I always will. And I told him, as I have before, I want Ukraine to prevail. By contrast, in our debate, Donald Trump couldn't even bring himself to say he wanted Ukraine to win the war. Couldn't even bring himself to say that. A war that Putin, a brutal dictator, launched against a free and independent people. Trump wants to force Ukraine to give up its sovereign territory, a bedrock principle upon which we stand and fight for. And you know who else wants them to give up their sovereign? Absolutely, territory? Putin. Putin. And that's not a plan for peace. It's a plan for surrender. Well, I believe that in the global struggle between tyranny and democracy, the President of the United States must always be on the side of freedom. So we are gathered here today in Ripon, not far, as the Congresswoman mentioned, from a small building where the Republican Party was born in 1854. Liz Cheney stands in the finest tradition of its leaders. And if people across Wisconsin and our nation are willing to do what Liz is doing, to stand up for the rule of law, for our democratic ideals, and the Constitution of the United States, then together I know we can chart a new way forward, not as members of any one party, but as Americans. Americans who are united in our devotion to the country we love. I thank you all. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America. Thank you all. Thank you.
Vice President Kamala Harris addressing the crowd at Ripon, the birthplace of the Republican Party, as has been mentioned a few times on this broadcast, picking up the endorsement of former Congresswoman Liz Cheney and her father, the former Vice President Dick Cheney. We bring in Dan Schaefer, Civic Media political editor. And Dan, I guess I'll just ask you the very broad question. What are your impressions of this afternoon's speeches?
Yeah, I think that was a really powerful speech from Kamala Harris on American democracy and the importance of our institutions, the importance of upholding that oath to the Constitution. She mentioned that several times throughout her speech, and talked about what she characterized as a profound difference between Donald Trump and herself, and how